Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Josh Rogers, and this is The Exchange. Healthcare controversies continue to swirl this week. Veterans at a town hall meeting confronted the acting director of Manchester's VA Medical Center over substandard care as Congress grappled with the future of Obamacare. And in response to presidential tweets banning transgender individuals from serving in the U.S. military, Governor Sununu said anyone who is willing to fight for this country should have the ability to do so. Meanwhile, New Hampshire Democrats hope their political fortunes are looking up after a win in Tuesday's state Senate special election. Finally, last week we saw bison roaming in Guilford. This week, it's goats munching atop the Keene landfill. Today on The Exchange, it's our weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Let's hear from you. You can call into The Exchange at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange, all one word. And I have two veteran reporters joining me in studio for the weekly news roundup this morning. Kevin Landrigan, he's senior reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader. Kevin, it's good to see you.
Thanks for having me back, Dean.
And Gary Reno, he is author of Distant Dome, a Manchester Ink Link and in-depth NH.org series on the New Hampshire State House. He previously worked as a reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader as well. And Gary, it's great to have you back.
Oh, great to be here, Dean.
I want to start with the latest developments in the Manchester VA Medical Center controversy. Where are we in the investigation right now, Gary?
Well, we're kind of at the early stages. We had a town hall meeting this week where about 100 people showed up, largely vets. It seemed like it was kind of a mixed crowd. Some were praising the care they received, and others were somewhat critical. But the secretary of the VA is showing up this week, David Shulkin. He's going to be meeting with a congressional delegation this week, and he's also going to be meeting with the whistleblowers who went to the Boston Globe about the situation at the VA.
Well, you mentioned a town hall meeting. Let's listen to what Acting Director Al Montoya had to say at the town hall meeting about the investigation and activities they're undertaking in response to the allegations.
The Office of Medical Inspector, the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection, we have teams from the Healthcare Improvement Center that are looking at things from engineering to quality to safety.
That is Acting VA Director Al Montoya at a town hall meeting in Manchester on Wednesday. And Kevin, let me turn to you to get your sense of the investigation. It seems like Mr. Montoya was at pains to show that there's a lot of investigating going on right now.
Yeah, there is. And certainly we do have a number of these whistleblowers, however, that feel even at this early stage, that the VA is not doing enough to get to the bottom of this matter and heed their concerns. Earlier this week, there was a lot of protests, a lot of pushback from some of the whistleblowers and their attorney, Andrea Amodio-Vickery, about a disclosure statement they were asked to sign, which one of the whistleblowers called a gag order that they refused to sign. The VA said this is just standard documentation that we're trying to protect patient privacy as we do this legitimate investigation. But with some of the whistleblowers, you see already some mistrust developing.
Gary, do you expect to see congressional oversight getting mixed into this? We've heard a little bit from Congresswoman Shea Porter about this issue.
Oh, I think, certainly we're going to see something like that come back through this. I mean, this has been an issue for a lot of them. Shea Porter has made it one of her key issues. Senator Jean Shaheen is another one. They're not just going to let this slip under the rug this time, I don't think.
And Kevin, you both have covered New Hampshire politics for a long time, and the VA issues have popped up from time to time. I'm trying to get a sense of sort of how serious these allegations are. You know, I was under the impression that the VA here in Manchester, even though it's not a full service VA, generally got good marks from patients, but it sounds like we're hearing a somewhat different story as well. So I'm just curious to hear from both of you your sort of sense of where the VA is right now.
Well, I think that certainly the staff at the VA Medical Center in Manchester has always been regarded as caring and supportive of the patients who are there. But I think what we're seeing now from these whistleblower physicians essentially is that a facility that has just not properly kept up with the times, that no longer is state of the art and a completely sanitary facility, talking about fly infestation in the operating room, unsanitary operating equipment, and problems that veterans face getting outside care through Veterans Choice as well. That's something we should just refer to. This is the Veterans Choice, is the option for veterans. Mm-hmm. And very important, thanks to the delegation from New Hampshire and former delegation, including former Senator Jed Gregg, veterans in New Hampshire, because they don't have a full-service hospital. If they live more than 30 miles away from a hospital, such as one in Boston, one in White River Junction, they have a Veterans Choice card, and they can use it to access care in other facilities.
Had been in trouble, but it sounds like I think the Congress, the House and Senate, have come to an agreement to fund it for at least another year, I believe.
Yeah, this was a white knuckle situation. They were bankrupt. They were running out of money, and if something wasn't done before the August recess begins this weekend, the program could have shut down. But a bipartisan compromise did develop. At the end of the week, VA Secretary Shulkin was involved in those negotiations, praised the bipartisan agreement. The delegation is voting for that agreement. It's supposed to come up in the House later today, on Friday, and be passed. So that crisis is averted. Mm-hmm.
And Gary, just briefly, I'm interested in your sense of how serious this is.
Well, I mean, as anybody who's been over there, it's an old facility. It's nothing that was put up in the last 10 years, that's for sure. And it's, I think from what, I mean, I have an uncle that goes there regularly, and from what he says, I mean, the care he gets from the nursing staff in particular is great. It's some of the upper level sort of things that seem to be the issue, the management style more than some other things.
Well, as we mentioned, VA Secretary Shulkin will be here next week, I believe on Friday, August 4th, but he will definitely be here next week to meet with the whistleblowers and further address the situation, and we'll continue to monitor it as well. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR, or email is exchange@nhpr.org. I'm in studio with Kevin Landrigan of The Union Leader and Gary Reno, writer of Distant Dome at indepthnh.org. And let's segue to talk more broadly about the fate of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act. A few days ago, we saw Senator John McCain of Arizona. Last week, I believe, Gary, we talked about his role in the New Hampshire mm-hmm. primary. But we saw Senator McCain come back to the U.S. Senate, cast a deciding vote in favor of proceeding to debate the repeal and replace of Obamacare. Last night, a lot of drama. If you were up around 1:30 in the morning, what did we see?
Well, we saw John McCain side with the Republican moderates, Susan McCollins and Murkowski from Alaska, to basically kill the skinny, what's called a skinny repeal, mm-hmm. which is basically it does away with individual mandate and business mandate, and also the tax on devices, and it also defunds Planned Parenthood for a year. Mm-hmm. But that went down by one vote. And so it's like, where are we now?
Well, and President Trump tweeted out this morning, just let Obamacare crash and burn, and we'll see where we are. So it sounds like they're kind of washing their hands of it, at least for the moment.
The trouble is, I mean, it's like you can say never in this, because we saw a week and a half ago it looked like the thing was dead and it came back. This is too big an issue for Republicans to let it just go away. That, I mean, they have nothing to show for the last 6 months, essentially, some of their biggest priorities, and they just can't let it go away.
Yeah, and Kevin, we heard this week a bit of a warning from the New Hampshire State Insurance Commissioner. We've got about 100,000 people who buy their insurance or get their insurance through the Obamacare exchange. About half of those are through expanded Medicaid, but there are about 50,000 people who buy individual policies. And the commissioner suggested that the health of the market here in New Hampshire is perhaps more of a concern than we thought. We had four insurers. I think we're down to three, and the plans right. are more limited. But he issued a bit of a warning this week.
He sure did. Roger Savini, the insurance commissioner, basically said the anticipated rate increases in this market in the area of 40%, he's really concerned, is basically going to cause a lot of individual insureds to leave the market, even though we still have Obamacare, as we were just talking about. You still have to get insurance, but you can pay a penalty. And his concern is a lot of individuals without insurance through Medicaid expansion or Medicare or their employer, if they're not sick, they'll leave. And so you're then left with a very ill population and a very ill marketplace, with only really, for all practical purposes, two insurers, Anthem and Harvard Pilgrim. So that is why the insurance department has come up with this plan, basically to create a risk pool and fund a risk pool, some with state and federal money, but the rest of it, about $30 million, coming from an assessment on all insurance companies. And that assessment would be funded, you know, based on the volume of business they each get, and these insurers.
Well, Senator Hassan weighed in on all of this in a meeting with healthcare leaders in Exeter on Monday. Let's hear what she had to say.
We know we have to lower healthcare costs for middle-class Americans. We have to stabilize the insurance market and protect the markets from the sabotage being attempted by the Trump administration.
That is Senator Maggie Hassan meeting with healthcare leaders in Exeter on Monday to talk about the need for a bipartisan plan in Washington. And Gary, this is an argument I've heard or a number of people make that Republicans are arguing that Obamacare and the exchanges are collapsing, but they're doing it in a way that is essentially sort of self-reinforcing and kind of sabotaging the exchanges rather than trying to fix the problems.
Well, there are a couple of issues here. One of them is the subsidies that are being issued. And the Trump administration won't commit beyond 1 month at a time as to whether they'll fund them. So insurance companies are sitting there saying, why am I going to be going out looking for business if I don't know that I'm going to get money from the federal government to subsidize these? And then if that's not the case, then we become a lot more expensive for everybody. And people are going to, as Kevin said, stop taking insurance. The other thing that also seems to have happened is that the mandates are not being enforced. And between the two of them, it's done a pretty good job of riling the markets in a big way.
Well,
yeah, I was
Kevin,
just
jump
say
in real quick.
Just real quickly, I was also going to say Governor Chris Sununu has weighed in on this, essentially said, I don't like the assessment idea of essentially taxing all insurance companies. I understand there's a problem. I want the department to consider other solutions than an assessment. Mm-hmm.
And I should mention that Senator Hassan will be here on the exchange on Monday, and you can email your questions in advance to exchange@nhpr.org. You can also send them via Facebook and Twitter as well. Sort of staying with the general topic of healthcare, but segueing a little bit, President Trump seemed to catch everyone, including the military, off guard on Wednesday morning, tweeting out in a series of three tweets, I believe, that he's going to ban transgender individuals from serving in the U.S. Military. And Gary, let me go to you first. I'm interested to hear from both of you about where is this coming from politically?
Well, politically, it's coming from the whole discussion that's going on about this, what's called the mini this budget for
the defense budget, right?
Basically, the defense budget and homeland security budget. There was an amendment that was proposed that would have prevented taxpayer money being used for transgender therapy and hormone therapy and things like that. And so it was at a point where it was probably going to put the whole thing at issue, could put it at risk. Included in this budget is the money for the wall that President Trump wants. And so he decides to put the whole issue to rest and just says, we're just not going to take transgender people anymore, and we're not going to allow them to
be. The issue was funding. Some conservative Republicans were upset about the funding of the medical costs for transitioning, and he just went ahead and just
blew the whole thing up
by just sort of banning everybody. Let's take a listen to U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, who said that her committee was certainly caught off guard by this.
And the president should not be setting national security policy by tweeting. We have thousands of transgender service members who are putting their lives on the line for this country every day. We should appreciate that. And the president should not be suggesting this kind of a change without consulting the top members of our military.
Yeah, that is Senator Jeanne Shaheen saying that the Senate Armed Services Committee was certainly caught off guard by this. She was speaking on MSNBC. Kevin,
yes.
The Joint Chiefs of Staff has said they're not going to implement anything until they get a directive from the Department of Defense. Your take on this?
Yeah, I think as well we saw at the end of the week Governor Chris Sununu, who had, on occasion on other issues has had President Trump's back, been criticized for it. He came out four square against this, essentially told NHPR yes on Thursday afternoon. I can't say I approve of the tweet that came out. It's not really official, and I'm not going to make judgment calls other than to say, again, you know, I think anyone who's willing to stand up and fight for this country should have the ability to do so. And as you know, in New Hampshire, we have pretty strong anti-discrimination laws. We don't have a transgender discrimination law. Gary will remember it was a pretty dramatic issue some years ago, narrowly passed the House and then died in the Senate. But Governor Sununu is standing behind these folks, and this is, you know, it's sort of typical Trump, is it not? I mean, by that, back to Gary's point, which is, you know, he's getting some progress, he's getting the wall built, he's, you know, this bill is advancing that he badly wanted, and this is ultra-conservative kerfuffle, and he just dumps in with both feet.
More on the top New Hampshire news in a moment. We have to take a break, but this is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. It's our weekly New Hampshire news roundup. We want you to call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. And I have two journalists in studio with me for the remainder of the show. Gary Reno, author of Distant Dome at indepthnh.org. He formerly worked as a reporter for the Union Leader. And Kevin Landrigan, who is currently senior reporter at the New Hampshire Union Leader. And before the break, we were talking about President Trump's surprise tweets on transgender individuals serving in the military. We have to wait and see how the Department of Defense decides to implement that. It seems like everything is on hold for the moment. So we'll continue to monitor that story, but I want to transition now to talk about some local electoral politics here in New Hampshire. Last Tuesday, we had a special election for the District 16 state Senate seat, which is the area around Bow and Hooksett and Candia and Dunbarton, and then the northern couple of wards of Manchester. It was a contest between Republican David Booten, Democrat Kevin Kavanaugh, and Libertarian Jason Dubrow. And Kevin, let me turn to you. What was the outcome in the special election?
Yeah, pretty impressive win for the Democrat, who's Ward 1 Alderman Kevin Kavanaugh. First time he'd stepped up and run for major office. He ended up with 55% of the vote to 44% for Dave Booten, and the Libertarian Jason Dubrow got only 1%. But the turnout was almost 21%.
Which is unusual. The special election in Concord last week was like 13% for a state House seat.
Yeah, and at the end of July, I mean, when it's really hard to motivate folks. But as we were talking about during the break, Kevin Kavanaugh, candidate for the Democrats right out of Central Casting, you know, longtime assistant business manager for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union. So had a ton of union support, a lot of Democratic establishment support, raised $110,000 for the job that pays $100 a year. This race attracted incredible amounts of monies.
It's amazing how state Senate races are now in the money flow, just like the congressional seats.
This is what has the Republicans all talking to themselves. Okay, let's consider this. Last November, when Hillary Clinton won this district, Scott McGilvery, again, was a great candidate, Democrat, coach.
This is the late Scott McGilvery.
The late Scott McGilvery, whose seat is being filled, exactly, ran against Joe Duarte, really nice former Candia Republican conservative, but an elderly gentleman who did not run a really active campaign. McGilvery won 51-49. So, you know, 6 months later, we've got the former incumbent, Dave Booten, who never lost in that district, get, as Gary was pointing out during the break, where the Republican Party spent approaching $100,000 to try and support his candidacy, only getting 44% of the vote. Now, the Republicans feel Booten's moderate leanings at times were the death knell here. Booten opposed right to work. Booten supported Medicaid expansion. The gun owners blame Booten for not advancing the repeal of the concealed carry permit back in 2010.
And he got the endorsement of the Concord Monitor, which, given what you're saying, may not have actually helped him if you're suggesting that Republicans, you know, stayed home because they don't think he's conservative enough. Yeah, Gary, your thoughts.
Well, I mean, he was always – his problem always was in the primaries and never in the general election. He was always a very popular candidate. He was probably a very good fit for that district. I mean, it's largely a Republican district. It leans heavily Republican.
It's been Republican seat since, for most of the last couple decades,
since
right?
Since once until McGilvery won,
right.
It's 78.
I was going to say it's been
the last Republican
years,
that held that seat. And so, I mean, it's just amazing what this turnout is. I mean, you know, you got the wards 1, 2, and 3, and they're not the strongest Democratic wards in Manchester.
No.
Any of them. And I mean, he just blew Booten away in the Manchester wards.
So I have to ask you the big question: if you were on Twitter on Tuesday night, the does it matter or doesn't it matter for the future of politics in the state question? Let me start with you, Kevin. You know, we saw Democrats on Twitter saying that this is a complete repudiation of President Trump and Governor Sununu's agenda. We saw Republicans saying, you know, it's a special election. It's not indicative of anything. Your thoughts, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm going to come down squarely in the middle. And by that, I mean this. I think the Democrats are right. There's enthusiasm on that side. The anti-Trump forces are really fired up. This was a big win for them, and they should take a lot of comfort from it. Republicans can essentially say this was Booten was a nice guy, but he wasn't the right conservative. He didn't energize our base. I mean, the best example John DeStaso from MUR had was J.R. Hole, who's the head of the House Freedom Caucus, you'll recall, the New Hampshire House Freedom Caucus, who John talked to, and Hole told John, "I didn't vote. I had to, you know, I had the option to work an extra hour and a half, and I chose to work an extra hour and a half." That's what tells you, you know, that that one base was fired up and the other was in some ways depressed.
Garrick?
And the other thing is, too, I think there is a Trump effect, if you will. And I think what's really the Trump effect, more than just the anti-Trump sentiment, is it's got a lot more people interested in politics. Mm. I mean, people who didn't used to care are caring now.
Yeah, many people have said that to me, that they think that in general people are more plugged in.
And I think that was a lot of what drove a lot of this is, I mean, and let's face it, turnout is key to, if you can turn out your vote in a special election, you're doing really well. And the Democrats certainly did a great job of turning out the vote.
Yeah, and I thought Ryan Williams, too, the longtime GOP strategist, had a really good point when he said the messaging of the Republican Party was bring back Booten. Mm-hmm. You know, now, you know, I don't know if, and this is a quote from Ryan Williams, who's a really sharp operative. You know, I don't know if anyone wants someone who's been in politics to be brought back these days. I don't know anyone wants to go backwards, and people might have been saying, maybe I'll try something new. And there's this Kevin Kavanaugh, good-looking, young, again, youth sports coach in Manchester, likable, non-threatening candidate on the other side.
Yeah, you do see these sorts of changing of the guard, particularly on parties that are out of the majority. We'll see whether it matters or not. We're still a ways away from the midterm election in 2018, and we'll get a better read on how people are feeling next summer. But also back in the news this week is the famous or maybe infamous Trump Commission on Voting Integrity. We had a lawsuit here in New Hampshire that was put on hold. Gary, it sounds like it's back on now.
It is back on because a federal judge turned down the federal suit and said that they could go ahead and ask for the
voter. And re-request the data, basically. Yeah.
And so the ACLU, along with Representative Neil Kirk and Senator Lasky, their suit gets their suit is going to be reinvigorated again, I guess is the best way to put it. Because they're going to try to stop the release here in New Hampshire.
And Kevin, we saw Secretary of State Gardner went down to that meeting in Washington recently, continuing to press the idea that this needs to be done in order to shore up trust in our electoral system. Your sense?
Yeah, that was his message to the commission. Essentially, was that look, we've got to get people believing in our elections again, and that we've got to get rid of this belief among many voters that the playing field is tilted against them, that that someone's got their finger on the scales, and he's hoping this commission will do that. He also had kind of a chance meeting with President Trump in the hallway during one of the breaks of the meeting, and a pretty animated conversation, according to the secretary, about New Hampshire and about how strongly Trump feels that this commission is needed.
And do you think, is there any implicit threat there about the primary or not really?
No, I don't think so. No, I think Donald Trump is fired up. Don't get me wrong. Meaning, I think Donald Trump desperately wants to win New Hampshire in 2020, and he'll redouble his efforts, as we obviously have seen with Kellyanne Conway coming here and other steps. The VA secretary coming this week. I mean, Trump has been pretty, and his folks have been pretty responsive to New Hampshire. I think that's going to continue, and it's all about 2020, winning this state.
So, Gary, it sounds like we're going to have there's going to be a court hearing coming up here in the state. How do you expect this to play out? How do you think it's going to play out?
Well, it's an interesting case because we have the law is kind of ambiguous a little bit, but if you read it for face value, it's kind of hard to see how you can release it just to release it. I mean, it's got to be released to a political candidate, a political committee, something like that. And that's Neil Kirk's point from mm-hmm. the beginning was that you just can't release this to anybody. If somebody can't come in and request it. You can come in and look at it, but you can't copy it. You can't do anything like that.
Yeah, he wasn't so much opposed to the giving it. Yeah. It's how it's being given was his issue.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a very interesting case to follow because it is kind of ambiguous as to what the
law says. Yeah, there's going to be some really interesting legal arguments. I've said many times when sitting on the other side of the table where you are that I don't think this is going to accomplish what Secretary of State Gardner wants. Yeah. But we'll see. Maybe I'll be proven wrong down the road. I want to shift gears a little bit, and Kevin, I'm going to turn to you. An interesting story about panhandling in Manchester, the connection to the opioid crisis, and some new signs that have been put up in the Manchester area. Let's start off by listening to Police Chief Nick Willard talking to WMUR back in June about this issue and the need to fight it as part of the drug crisis.
The large majority of that population are feeding some sort of addiction or have some underlying mental illness. And to just give them $5 and potentially lead to a fatal overdose, I'm sure that's not what the person who's giving would really want.
That was Chief Nick Willard talking to WMUR back in June about panhandling and its relationship to the drug crisis. Kevin, say a little bit about these new signs that are popping up around Manchester. We saw the other day at least one of them was vandalized. But nonetheless, they're out there now talking about not giving money to panhandlers.
Yeah, my colleague Paul Feely did the story on this week, and it's a continuing saga, as you alluded to. These signs say, your generosity could lead to a fatality, meaning you're putting these folks at risk by giving money to panhandlers. And the signs urge people to consider making a donation instead to social service agencies like New Horizons for New Hampshire, Child and Family Services, Families in Transition, Hope for New Hampshire Recovery. Any of these nonprofits would, in the minds of police and the Board of Aldermen, would be better than giving the money to panhandlers. As the chief has said, 24 known panhandlers have overdosed in the last 29 months. Some of them multiple times, six of them have died. He says the department will continue cracking down on these folks by issuing summons to people who impede the flow of traffic by slowing down or stopping to donate.
And, you know, Gary, when I first heard the issue of fatalities, I just instinctively thought they were talking about, you know, people stepping off the curve and getting hit by cars. I didn't catch the initial connection to the opioid crisis. Yeah. This has been an issue here in Concord. Concord has tried to deal with it. A number of groups have pushed back. Your sense of the issue?
Well, it's been, I mean, it's not just Concord and Manchester. It's Nashua. It's all over the place. People are out there trying to get money, largely, you know, a number of them to feed their addiction. And it's kind of a interesting thing in that how do we really deal with this, you know? And they got sued, Manchester's been sued by the ACLU over the whole issue, and as does Nashua, I believe, at one point, too. So it's a really, how do you stop people from hurting themselves, you know? And that's a really tough question.
Well, we do need to take one more break. Coming up, more on the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
In the market for a modern car that can really take you places? Then look no further than NHPR's Summer Car Raffle. Your $50 raffle ticket could turn into $25,000 toward a new Toyota, Mazda, Hyundai, Ford, or Honda. So get your tickets now because, great Scott, it's almost over. We'll be picking our lucky winner this Saturday at noon. Get in on the fun when you get your raffle tickets now at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. It's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. And I wanted to mention once again to listeners, Senator Maggie Hassan will be on The Exchange on Monday. You can send your questions in advance by email, exchange at nhpr.org. Or you can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. And we were just talking about the panhandling issue in Manchester and the signs, and we just heard from Chief Willard. I believe Chief Willard will be on The Exchange next Thursday, so I'm sure there'll be more conversation about that. I'm in the studio here with Gary Reno and Kevin Landrigan, and I want to turn my attention to something actually quite nearby here in Concord, and that's the new women's prison. And Gary, we learned that it may be finished in October as promised, but the opening is going to be delayed until sometime in 2018. Why is that?
The long-awaited, much-litigated women's prison.
Yeah, say a little bit about where this all comes from and the issue with Goffstown, et cetera.
Right. I mean, it's been the women's prison has been in Goffstown for quite some time in the old county facility. And there have been numerous lawsuits concerning opportunities for women as compared to opportunities
sort
for
of parity,
parity for male prisoners, which one of the latest ones has been put on hold while the prison has been built. But now it should come as no surprise that they're having trouble staffing it because they've had trouble staffing the men's prison for quite a while. They've always been a little short of help.
Is it a money issue or just a personnel issue?
It's a little of both. I mean, they don't pay an awful lot of money, so there's an awful lot of desire to be there. But it's also they've had a hard time just attracting people to take the job because it takes a long time to train people. And then and you have a lot of attrition on top of it because these people leave from there to go into police work other places. So it's an ongoing problem. And this has complicated it even more because then now we got a whole new staff that we want to put together for a women's prison. And they wanted 75 new positions. The legislature gave them 55.
Right.
They wanted to start recruiting this spring. The legislature said you can't start till July. So now they're kind of up against it, and they're not going to be able to staff the prison. Mm-hmm. And it opens in October or November.
And Kevin, I should mention that my understanding is this prison is three times the size of the Goffstown prison. So we're talking a much more substantial facility for anyone who's ever driven by Goffstown. And this new prison, I believe, is going to be in Concord. It's being built behind the current men's prison, just north of downtown.
Yeah, that's right, Dean. It's much larger than the current prison. It's going to have more inmates, some of whom are now incarcerated in county jails. It's also going to have some who might have been incarcerated out of state. It'll offer better access to health care and more training programs.
Classroom space.
So all that. It's a real state-of-the-art facility. I've seen it going up. We've not had a tour yet through it. I'm really anxious to see it. But it is frustrating, I feel for Commissioner Wren. I think he told this legislature this was going to be a challenge staffing this prison. This is not a new story. But to Gary's point, he can't recruit until the legislature tells him he can recruit. Now he's talking about actually getting an outside marketing firm and hiring them to help promote these vacancies so he can fill them.
Just to cast a wider net?
Exactly, to cast a wider net and try and keep the delay manageable instead of a year, year and a half. Only a month's delay if we can get the help of someone, beating the bushes out there for good candidates.
Are these kind of funding issues, Kevin, typical for the prison population, or is this unusual to have the state legislature give you fewer positions than are requested as governor?
No, it is typical, as Gary knows well, following this budget for state budget process for a long time. This has always been a push me pull you debate. We've had governors and legislatures, too, kind of throw up their hands and get all worked up at the end of a budget cycle saying, why is there all this money for overtime in the Department of Corrections? And the answer is there are that many vacant positions at the prison that we can't fill because you won't give us the money to fill the permanent position. So so some of these corrections officers, is very stressful job, no question about it. And to Gary's point, the turnover and the attrition is high, and that just completes the cycle. Mm-hmm. That adds to this vacancy problem.
And Gary, let's shift to, you certainly can give your additional thoughts on that if you'd like to, but I want to shift also, talk about another law enforcement matter. And this is the release of video of an officer-involved shooting on Interstate 89 in Warner. Some listeners who sort of live up in that neck of the woods may remember that back in May when this happened, I-89 southbound was shut down for a good chunk of the evening as officers dealt with it. So what did we learn this week?
Well, we saw the release of the video, which is what has a number of news agencies had tried to get it, and they finally released it. We learned basically what happened, I guess, in a sort of general sense without the real details coming out. But the police stopped this car, which was reported as stolen. And the gentleman gets out. He was a Vermont resident.
And I recall, was this he stole his mother's car?
Correct,
or was it a family member's car?
Right. And it drew an awful lot of police by the time.
From all over, all kinds of police, right?
Yeah. From all of Grantham and New London, as well as state police. And the video shows him sort of standing there for a little bit and then kind of quickly pulling his hand out of his shirt.
And pointing it as like a fake gun.
And that's when the officers fired. One officer's gun jammed. One of the officers shot a rifle, which missed, and then one of the state police shot him in the leg.
Yeah, Kevin, this was a pretty serious thing to happen on an interstate. I happened to be heading northbound that night, and I saw a massive line of traffic just behind the cop cars.
Yeah, no question about it. And and obviously, it's important to point out that the state police do not have dash cams, and they don't wear body cameras. And some of the local police vehicles did have cameras in them, but they were not activated. So all these images came from bystanders who'd been stuck in traffic. 11 videos, 31 still images. And what's really gripping about some of this video, I mean, some of it is, you know, is YouTube video, meaning you sit there for a minute and a half and really nothing's happening and he hasn't gotten out of the car yet. But some of it is really gripping in that you can hear some of the conversations of the bystanders who are feet away from the
sort of narrating it.
You know, from narrating it. Like a male, at one point, a male motorist can be heard on the video thinking he saw Brian Evans shoot first at the officers. And of course, authorities later confirmed that Evans was unarmed and he was pointing his fingers, like Gary was saying. So the video sort of confirmed that kind of fog of war effect that occurred that night, where it was unclear even to the officers how much of a threat this guy was, because it was a felony warrant stop. So they're all trained to treat it like it. It can be a life or death situation.
Yeah, it's quite a gripping video. The young man was certainly lucky because he could have very easily been killed. And my understanding is he's going to be back in court in August. Gary, on a lighter note, one final story in the time we have remaining. Last week you were here and we talked about bison roaming around Guilford. This week we learned that Keene has taken up a very high tech. Means of mowing the lawn on its closed landfill.
They certainly have. They've hired a bunch of goats to clear the landfill.
It's like 33 goats, I think.
33 goats. They're hired from a local farm in Marlboro that kind of rents these goats out to do this very, very substantial work. What's kind of interesting is they tried this once before in Keene with sheep, but that didn't work out so well.
Yeah.
But goats are much more attuned to the vegetation on top of the landfill and do a really nice job of cleaning out the bushes first and then going for the grass.
We are just about out of time. I want to mention to listeners, once again, Senator Hassan will be here on the exchange on Monday. You can send your questions to exchange@nhpr.org. I want to thank my guests. This is the exchange, Kevin and Gary. This is the Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.